Ajay, welcome. When I attended your talk, my ears really pricked up when you said you cannot refer to or calculate ROI on something that is not generating revenue.
So my background comes from the accounting and finance background. So I went to school, got my degree in finance, and then went on to get a graduate degree in accounting. And went on to complete a chartered professional accounting designation in Canada. All the while, I was working for a corporate, a major corporation, and the head office in Montreal, Canada, ascending the corporate ladder. When I started at that time as a director in the department, where my boss asked me to start doing some training, and I found great joy in doing that training. Actually, I found that most joy in doing that training on the job to other people. Rather than doing my own job. And so what came to pass is that I decided at that point, since I enjoyed it so much, I might as well go back to school and do a graduate degree in adult education. Well, upon completion of that and still working at this company, I was wondering, what do I do with these two things? Like, it's, you know, one thing doesn't look like the other. And so putting accounting and finance with education or adult learning didn't seem a great fit. And I was trying to find a reconciliation. And hence, an epiphany came to me while I was driving one day saying, well, there has to be some accountability. And he went back to my experience and as a director, where my boss would ask me to send my employees to training. And each time they would come back, not applying much of what they learned. And a lot of money was taken out of my budget to pay for it. And by the third or fourth time that my boss asked me to send people to training, I kept refusing. And he said to me, you can't do that. And I said, yes, I can. I said, because you're holding me to account to my performance objectives in the department. I said, my people are coming back. First of all, spending time in training that they're not getting anything out of, coming back, not applying anything that makes me more productive or my department more productive. And now you're accusing me of not having enough money because you've taken all that money to send it to training. So it was that epiphany that said to me, well, reconcile my finance and accounting side with my learning side, and hence meeting you and having to chat today.
What's on my mind right now is that fault line that you had between the corporation, the business, and the learning and development, the building of both yourself and of course others. And you mentioned quite a few times budget. I think oftentimes that's where we get tripped up, is either we haven't made it our business if we're primarily in teaching and learning, and we haven't made it our business to understand the systems and the vocabulary of the boardroom, and equally how the boardroom has also not learned the language of the teaching and learning community. So you've just released your new book, Learning Metrics, and the subtext here is how to measure organizational learning.
So going back to your point, so back in the day when I was in that position at that company, you know, and this is going back before really e-learning took hold, per se, there was some online learning, but nothing to write home about. And it basically, the measure, typically, this, unfortunately, that we still use today for some companies is, you know, butts in seats, right? How many people can we get into the session? And so it logically, I'm not saying it makes sense 100%, but it reconciles in the business leader's mind that where it's economies of scale, the more people we can put through it, the more per employee costs it comes down on a per employee basis. And so it becomes cheaper on a per employee basis. And actually, that's funny, because that mindset is an accounting finance mindset, which will lead us into our discussion here. That your business leaders are formally educated and typically in some sort of finance and accounting rules and standards. And so we call that economies of scale. It's an amortization of fixed costs. What I mean by that is that the more fixed training and all that kind of stuff, especially the infrastructure training, is considered a fixed investment in a company. And all fixed investment, and I'll give an example, machinery, computers, anything that's long-term, buildings, property, that kind of stuff, has to be amortized over a period of time. And a period of time is usually multiple years. And so when you do that, you're bringing, and the more you use that fixed asset, the more you use it, the more you bring its per unit cost down to its lowest amount per unit. And that's what they're trying to do with putting people in seats. So, you know, that's, and I think our peers who are listening to this have to realize that that's where their mindset is, right? So that's where they're going, the business leaders. It doesn't mean it's right. And to your point, we have to be the, I always say, not just the interpreters, which you brought a great point, David, to say that we've been the interpreters and the translators between the two, communicating between learning and business. But also we should also become the therapists to learning what their problems are. And that takes us out from being the order takers that we're saying that we are. We're taking orders for training to become the proactive members of the business and being vested into the solving the issues rather than waiting it to come to us. But going back to the translation, you're absolutely right. I mean, we need to, I think more on our part, I mean, when I say our, I'm talking about learning and development. We need to understand the language that's being used. And if you permit me, there's an analogy I used to use, and people tend to believe this because I used myself in it. When I was a young lad in high school, I was a nerd. I didn't fit in very well with a lot, especially the cool crowd, right? And what I would try to do is try to listen to the language that they were using, right? So I'd listen to the cool crowd and the cool kids, and they would be using these terminologies. And I would come up and say, start using the terminology like I knew what I was talking about. And they would all look at me like, you have no clue. You really have no clue. And then they would walk away. And I would look even stupider than before. So, and I hate, and I use that analogy because the business people in your organization are the cool crowd. When we start tossing around terminology like training ROI, not really respecting how they understand it, and we start using it just like that. It's like, hey, we got training ROI. This is what you want to see. I keep hearing you use ROI, so here's training ROI. And they look at us and they roll their eyes and say, you have no clue. And we just undermine our credibility even more. And so we have to be careful of the language we use, how we use it, and understand their interpretation of what we're talking about. And allow me to end with this point on this. And people always misinterpret me here when I talk about this topic, but I'm not trying to make learning and development people experts in finance or accounting. But I must remind them that they are a business function within a business expected to deliver business results. So the common term here is business. So you have to be at least business literate. And I'm not saying to forego all the learning expertise. That's what you were hired for. But nobody wants to know how the sausage is made. They just want the sausage, right? And you go to McDonald's and order a Big Mac. I don't want to know how it's made. I just want the stupid thing delivered to me. Because if I knew how it's made, I probably wouldn't eat one anymore. But anyways, point being is that that's the same analogy I used to do learning development. Stop being the child who wants the parent to put their picture on the refrigerator and with a gold star and say, good job, you know, Mary and John. No, it's not about the adulation and telling them how well you built the learning development. It's what the learning development is going to do for the organization that counts. Training ROI is a fallacy because we have to understand how business is structured and how to measure performance. There are four areas, but I'll only speak to three. The three areas of performance accountability with organizations are what we call a profit center, a cost center, an investment center. Now, I'll drop the investment center for the time being. We won't get into that. That's more of major investments or spin-off of organizations. But a profit center is the primary driver of the organization. It's the department that delivers revenue to the company. So, you know, think of Apple iPhone or whatever. iPhone department is a profit center for Apple. A cost center is, so they're evaluated based on the profitability and all those performance metrics. A cost center is based on how it uses the money it is allocated. It's not measured on based on what profit it generates. And so when people say we're a cost-free organization, that's not an insult. Your business leaders' mindset are going, well, how are we measuring the use of that cost, the money that we allocated? And if you think, and L&D always get, you know, self-centered around this, they always think that they're the only ones at a cost center. They're not. There's many cost centers, including finance and accounting, manufacturing, marketing, IT. These are all cost centers. They're not expected to make profit, but what are they expected to do? Just like L&D, the money that they get to deliver value to a lot of profit centers to thrive. Okay, that's the goal. They're support. They're like the skeleton in your body that supports everything that, you know, the skin and the organs and all that, that supports us to live. That's what the cost centers are. How well they support and deliver value to those departments is how it's what's measured. So going back to your question, David, hopefully I didn't go too far down the rabbit hole. So I just wanted to lay that out because it's always this misconception about costs and cost centers and so forth. But when an organization allocates money to any department, profit or cost, it's about how well they use it and generate. So whatever their role is. So on a cost center basis, how well are we using money to support and drive business for the organization? That's number one. Now, number two, we are one of many cost centers. So there's many moving parts in organizations. So just because L&D does a great job in training and supporting people, may not always, we may do a good job, but there's other components that may impede or affect the outcomes of that business result. So that we have to keep that in mind. So when it comes to costs, we get allocated costs. So in accounting standards, typically, and accounting rules and laws, we typically do not measure ROI on costs. Never. It's always return investment on either investments or profit, okay, or departments that generate profit. So with that in mind, how do we measure the performance outcome of learning and development? Well, it's how effective we use that money. So where do we contribute value in the organization? And so typically the easiest way, it's not the easiest way to actually execute, but the most direct way to measure the impact they have on an organization and the learning is how you measure improved performance of those departments you're impacting. And those departments are under a lot of pressure, the revenue centers. Under a lot of pressure I've been told what key performance objectives they have to meet. And those performance objectives are well outlined. They're not hidden. That's where I said to you in the beginning, let's get out of our seats and our cubicles and go talk to these people, become the therapists, and learn about the pressure pains that they're under. Learn about their business and say, okay, you believe that your people are not performing as well as they should be, then allow me to do what I need to do to diagnose whether they're performing well and where they are not performing well. And so this is where we do our skills assessment, our needs assessment, and all. This is where the sausage is being made, right? And we go out and we assess the people and try to figure out where the weak areas are. Once we develop the weak areas, we can say, okay, go back to the directors and managers, say, well, David McLean is not, he's good in these areas, but there's a few weak areas that he has that we believe we can skill up and make him more productive and make sure that he applies the new skills. Perfect. Allocate the budget to that, making David better in those areas. And you know, and I'm being very short about this. And actually, I know it's a little more involved. But the point being is that if I'm able to move that needle and alleviate the stress or performance pressure for that department, then I look like a hero. Again, I'm going to qualify this because there's a lot of other parts playing a role in it. There could be processes. There can be other things in the organization. But at least if I can help improve David's performance and prove that I've improved David's performance and over time, then I know that I've made my value known to that department and to the organization that learning can make a difference. And people say, well, that's a really easy answer, Ajay, to give, but can you prove it? Yes. Look around you at the top leading organizations in the world, Starbucks, Toyota, just to name two. And I purposely named these two because they're not typically technology-focused companies. Toyota is the poster child for the last 50, 60 years of integrating learning into their processes so it's become part of the culture. The reasons that we see Toyota vehicles being apparently one of the best and most reliable company is because their focus on their anal retentive focus on how to define quality. And 90% of their training focuses on that iterative capacity of improving quality and making sure that mistakes never happen a second time. And they keep improving it. And that's not by accident. That's by design, because their learning and development department is fully integrated. So when they stop a production line, if people don't understand the impact of stopping a production line, especially in a factory like Toyota, any of their factories, It's nuts. It's thousands, tens of thousands of dollars per hour that is being halted and affecting the value chain and an operative supply chain all the way down through the process. For them to allow you or me to do that is invaluable, because now they just don't stop to fix the problem. They stop to learn how, learn what the problem is, not just fix it, learn it to make sure it never occurs again. And there's another thing that Toyota does, and I always say this about American car companies. Whenever you hear American car companies always lay off people, you rarely hear a Toyota or Nissan or Hyundai lay off anybody. Rarely ever. And why is that? Because number one, they're already lean. They know where to allocate their resources. Number two, they want to hang on to that knowledge. So even though there are invaluable areas to the business that they'll shut down, they'll reallocate those people to other areas and leverage that knowledge. And I said knowledge by design because they are knowledge companies. Knowledge and learning development within organizations is so relevant. It is the top three priorities of business leaders. And I kid you not, when you look at a Toyota or a Starbucks, you see how powerful knowledge and learning is within an organization.
Let's do a quick role play here. I am a passionate learning and development professional, and I work in company X, and you are the CFO, and you hold a cynical view on the spend. What could I do as the learning and development professional? Because of the amount of variables that amplify or dilute performance, how will you know and be able to report to me and others that the investment in this learning can be quantitatively measured so that we can measure the efficacy of the spend relative to the intended learning outcomes?
The cynicism is not far from reality for business leaders. So especially on the CFO side of things, they're looking at the spend. Now, radar, how to get training or learning on your leader's radar. So in your example, the first R in radar is resistance. Typically, a CFO is going to say things like, what is it going to cost? And you feel right away by that question as a learning and development person proposing your okay, it's going to cost this amount of money, and then you're going to get shot down. What they're really asking in the question is, what value, if I give you the money, what value are you going to deliver to me, and how are you going to deliver it to me, right? So you have to read between the lines, because the CFO, as cynical as CFO, if they're serious about the organization, they realize that their people are their most important resource within the organization, and that without them working effectively, properly, in the same direction, having the appropriate knowledge and skill sets, they're not going to get anywhere. It doesn't matter how much machines or property they have, they're not going to get anywhere if the people are not firing properly on all cylinders. So the what does it cost is, prove to me that what you're offering will improve that workforce if I give you the money. If you're asking me for $100 or $100 million, it doesn't matter. If I give you that money, you show me what is the, I'm going to use the word return, but carefully here. What is return I'm going to get from giving you that money? Okay, so that's number one. Now, the next A is the apathy. Now, what happens in training, and this is our fault in learning and development, is that for years we haven't been proving our results. So what has happened? We deliver training, and the people say, okay, we got the training from training and development. Again, like my example when I was working, it didn't work. Now I'm resigned to the fact that training will never work. Right. So I'm now, I don't even hate it anymore. There's a lot of apathy here. I don't care for it. So how do I get over that? And that's my fault. So again, it goes back to the first question, proving the process will actually make my people better. Okay. D is in the radar of disruption. Well, the one question you're going to have is, when is this going to happen? Disruption means, see, while they respect the fact they need learning for people, and they realize it's going to be in, I would call it an interruptive process, meaning that people either have to stop to learn something in some form. How do you minimize that? How do you minimize that interruption? Because leaders don't want to see their processes stopped, right? Because the more you stop processes, you don't make any money. And people, you and me as employees, because of that apathy, are saying, oh, I have to go to training again. You know, I go to, or I do training, whether it's an hour on e-learning or a week out in a retreat, it doesn't matter. It means if I'm sitting at that training for whatever duration, I'm thinking about all the work that's piling up on my desk. And so if you're not delivering me value in this training, I still have to go back to that. So the disruption is a very important factor, and you need to be able to address that. The next day is the application. How are we going to put it into play? So here's the dangerous part, because when it gets into play, a lot of L&D people, I go to conferences and I see the trade shows, and I see people running around seeing all the beautiful bells and whistles and gadgets and say, well, I need this, I need that, and so forth. And I always remind learning development people, the more gadgets and electronics you want in your learning is great for you, but it only means one thing. The E in e-learning, and I use this globally, not just for courses, but all the learning infrastructure elements. The E in the e-learning part doesn't mean electronic for them. It means efficiency and effectiveness. So IT's purpose is to be, make companies more efficient and more productive. So if you're going to ask for an LMS or new tablets or new softwares or anything that comes to mind, you better make sure that it is actually going to make not only your learning more efficient, but make the reduction and interruption of training in the process shorter. So rather than send people out for a day for training, and maybe during our needs analysis, I don't need to put David in a whole week's of training, but now I can target exactly what David is weak in and send him very targeted tutorials that will take him 10 minutes or 15 minutes. Now I'm making the stakeholders happy because they made the right investment in those technologies to deliver training to you. And you're happy as an employee because you're not being taken out of the loop so far that you can get what you want. And you know, employees want, look at, we're in a society, David, where I learn things on YouTube. You better get into it. Tell me what I need to learn, and then I can go and apply it. And so employees are getting the same condition, same way. I need to be in and out very quickly with the learning so people, so David can apply it immediately.
And that's not even just in time. It's just on time.
Yeah.
Real time. Basically. Immediacy. Hey.
That's the power of learning and the technologies we have. So don't go with your old mindset of, oh, we need to make sure there's an hour or 4 hour course. Why? Ask yourself, why are you doing a 4 hour course if it only takes 5 minutes for this person to learn the skill set, right? So you question your learning all the time. And I'm not saying 4 hour courses are invaluable, but make sure that there's a reason for it. And the last one is results, right? Make sure you can prove the outcome of the results. So if you're moving the needle, let's say, you know, it's reduction in defects in production. Well, if you're learning that you've integrated into the whole radar process and you can measure a benchmark, a key performance indicator like reduction of defects, and they're at 10% defect rate and they want to reduce it to, say, 7% or 6%. But even if you don't reach that target, among other elements that are involved, even if you reduce it to from 10 to 8 or 9 just because David got better doing what David does, right, learning the machinery better or, you know, being able to do things a little bit better, that alone, even if you didn't reach a target or happen to reach a target, that alone is going to make you look like a hero, because that 2% difference or 1% difference in the defect rate is thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, right? So the process is this. You have to build a business case when you speak. As cynical as the leaders are, the CFO, they do, first of all, let's park the cynicism aside. They need the learning. They know they need the learning. So here's what I always say when, you know, people say, well, why do they cut my budgets? I said, well, that's on you. If your budget in learning was cut, you need to look at yourself in the mirror. If they cut your budget, it's not personal, because they look at the money that's being allocated to your cost center and they're saying, there's no value being driven here. Let's put it somewhere else that's going to deliver value. That's the budget cut. So if you haven't delivered a value, no kidding, your budget is going to get cut, and you deserved it. So prove them value, and you'll see increases in budget. I worked with Apple for 6 years. Downtimes in Apple, they increased their budgets because the way learning was integrated into their process. So when the uptick came in the economy or whatever, they were ready to hit the ground running. And so that's the power of being fully integrated and delivering value to the organization. Nobody cares about the vehicle. They care about the results. But for some reason, L&D likes it. So look at my training program, how well and how it's delivered. Nobody cares. They care about what is the output. And if your output is fantastic, they'll love you for it. That's number one. Number two, we are learning practitioners, meaning that what we promote to people to keep learning, why are we not doing it ourselves? And what I mean by that is that we love to sit on our ivory towers and preach about how important learning is, but learning practitioners are not practicing what they preach. So if you want to be relevant to the business, then do yourself a favor. Don't listen to the quick fix methodologies that you see out there, because most of them are not going to gain you any credibility. Training ROI especially, I'll be adamant about this. You want to really get your leaders to roll their eyes, speak about training ROI, okay? There's the tangible elements of the ROI, meaning the infrastructure for learning, and then there's the intangible activity of training itself. Those are valued differently. So don't talk about training ROI, and you want that seat at the table that you keep talking about, Lil and D. Well, you can't sit at the table if you don't know what you're talking about. So you can't sit there and say, yeah, learning is important, I deserve a seat. No, you don't deserve a seat until you know what you're talking about. And until you can pull out the concepts and understand literacy, not expert, literacy, about what they're saying around the table, until that point comes, then you're not going to be valued.